Yeah, Night School 29. The topic today is going to be laughter and smiling, particularly the ways that we falsely do these things just to get by. I'm sitting in my house, and there are some guys doing work on the house across the street, and they were on a break. And throughout their entire conversation, I could hear this one guy laughing. It was this very loud laugh, but it was very clearly a fake laugh. And it wasn't horribly obnoxious. Like, I'm not sitting here hating on the poor roofer or cabinet maker or whatever the fuck he is. But I was just very aware of how fake that laugh was, and it made me think about the way that fake laughter serves this huge purpose in our society. And I think people notice fake laughter, but I don't think they really acknowledge it, and maybe it's better that they don't, because I do it. Even just something as simple as a huh. You know, we do it constantly. Sometimes it's because someone says something that is either funny or supposed to be funny, and it might not make us actually erupt in natural laughter, but we want to acknowledge the fact that it was funny, so we sort of do that. It's maybe out of kindness for somebody who's trying to be funny, or just to say that, like, I get that you're trying to be funny. And this whole line of thought, whenever I'm on one of these tangents, what I think of is this friend of my sister's boyfriend when I was a kid. And he was telling this story about how the night before his dad had given him a hug. And when his dad gave him a hug, he patted him on the back. And he asked his dad, "Why do people do that? Why do people pat each other on the back?" And his dad kneed him in the stomach in response to that question. Now, I don't think it was like some horribly abusive just knee to the stomach. Like, I don't think he hurt the kid. It was just sort of, I think, probably a gentle, like, don't ask questions like that. Very blue collar. I think his family was very blue collar. And yeah, why would you ask that? Why would you ask why people pat each other on the back? I mean, this show is pretty much the Night School edition of this show is very much just that question, I feel like, in different ways. Why do people pat each other on the back when they're giving each other hugs? You ever notice how people pat each other on the back when they're giving each other hugs? What's up with that? You know, I feel like this whole show is basically that mindset. But yeah, I do think about that laughter, that little you know, sometimes it's more than just a huh. You know, sometimes it's actually like a full-blown laugh, but it's not real. And it's weird because we laugh at things that don't actually make us laugh, and we don't laugh at things that we actually find funny. Like, I find sometimes I'll be listening to a comedian, or I'll be listening to a story from a person I know, anything like that, and I will find it very funny. On some cerebral level, I'm very amused, but there's nothing about it that just triggers that natural laughter. Nothing actually pushes me into a laugh. And that doesn't mean I don't find it funny. It doesn't mean anything. It for whatever reason, some things push me over. I mean, it just, sometimes it's the person telling it. I have certain friends who, if they just tell me even the simplest story, I'm laughing very hard. And I have friends who can tell me things that are, you know, otherwise humorous and that I genuinely find funny, but I don't laugh at them. And it's the same for movies. It's the same for TV. Although I find TV is less and less funny. And I don't know if that's just me changing, but when I see things like if I see a glimpse of Saturday Night Live, and this isn't me being some like comedy elitist or anything like that, but when I just see glimpses, I'm like, they don't even seem to really be trying anymore. But the audiences like it, you know. And you think about canned laughter, and that's a whole other variation on this, the idea of piping in laughter for a television show, even one that's done live, or asking people to clap, or, you know, those signs that say, like, laugh now. I don't know if they say laugh now, but there's that idea of, you know, the audience has to laugh. If you go to see a live taping of a show, you better fucking laugh. And if they don't get enough laughs, if the audience is just not doing what they're supposed to do and they're supposed to laugh, they're going to pipe it in afterwards. They're going to throw that in there. So fake laughter really is this, it's everywhere. And you even think about I'm talking about people doing it in person, because I saw a joke a few years ago. It was some little video about how people aren't actually laughing when they say ha-ha or LOL through a text message or email or online, and it was calling people out for that. It was a video of two guys like sitting in an office working, and they were chatting online while sitting next to each other, and the guy would send the other guy something funny, and the other guy would say LOL, but he wasn't, and then he would look at the guy's face, and the guy wasn't laughing. And LOL, of course, means laugh out loud, so it's not just the online haha. It's actually supposed to mean out loud. But the other side of that is that people are continually doing a fake laugh in person. And in some ways, it's sort of like a weird defense mechanism. It communicates that, like, I'm not taking this situation too seriously, or I get what's going on. Because that's the other thing, too, is if you don't get a joke, there's this weird, it's one of the worst feelings in the world. It's one of the worst feelings in the world when you're standing with a group of people and somebody makes a joke, especially when you're growing up. And you don't get it, but everybody else seems to. But thinking about it now, it's like you don't really know that everybody else got it. They may have just been going through the motions as well. But you'll let out this fake laugh to be like, I got it. And there's a whole other type of person who will do a fake laugh in response to a joke and then say, oh, wait, what does it mean? You know, and that's embarrassing. And I've been that person before. I think everybody has, but you let out that fake laugh because on some weird survival level, you don't want to be the one who's left out. You don't want to be the person who doesn't get the joke, because the world runs on jokes. If you don't get the joke, you're going to die. But we do that. We'll laugh just because, like, our survival instinct kicks in. We're like, everybody else is laughing, I better laugh. And then we don't get it, but we actually want to know what the joke meant, so we ask, but we humiliate ourselves and become a joke in the process, and then someone says something mean to you, because people do that. People can be mean about humor. People can be very mean about a lot of lighthearted things, and that's the other side of this topic, is smiling, because I'm someone who just doesn't naturally smile much. In photos, none of the men on my side of the family ever smile in photos. You know, we did every photo of my dad, my uncles, my grandfather, just very stoic. And I don't know when that became a thing. I'm curious when smiling in photos became this necessary thing. Because if you look at very early photographs of families, these, you know, almost gothic looking portraits of families, everybody's very stoic. Their mouths are just straight across. And people have a tendency now to look back at those and be like, everybody looks unhappy. Everybody back then just looked unhappy in photos. But it hadn't been communicated to them back then that you were supposed to smile. There was no idea out there when it came to photography that you were supposed to be documenting a moment of happiness. It was simply, this is a family. This is what a family looks like. Because I've heard people say, oh, it was because life was harder back then. Families didn't smile in those old portraits because life was harder back then. And it's showing the hardship. You can see the hardship on their faces. And it's like, I don't even think that was it. On one hand, I think that's true that, you know, I think there was more of a general neutrality, and life was harder in some respects because we didn't put happiness on the same pedestal we do today. I think that is maybe reflected in those old portraits of people. But at the same time, I think that just the cultural momentum hadn't picked up to where you feel this necessity to look happy in photos. Because that's kind of the idea now, is that, not even kind of, it really is the idea, is that if you're taking a photo of someone, you better look happy. You're supposed to be documenting this great moment where everybody is just ecstatic to the point of smiling, and people practice their smiles. And for me, one of the reasons I don't smile in photos, unless somebody truly does capture a rare, candid moment where I'm genuinely smiling, but one of the reasons I don't smiling is because my fake smile is fucking sickening. It's terrifying. And when I have done that in photos, people always call me out. A friend of mine was taking a photo a while back, and I actually did smile. And she was like, "You look disturbing," you know. And so that's the weird catch 22 where people have always called me out for not smiling. Oh, your face looks the same in every photo. You never smile. He never smiles. You know, people have a tendency to point that out. But then when I do smile, it's like horrifying. And that's sort of the underlying current in a lot of my life. It's like, how come you're not doing this? And then I do it and it's like, oh, it's fucking disturbing when you do it. Somewhere along the lines, we got this idea that if you're documenting people doing things, they're supposed to look happy. And I had a boss who, he liked the company to take a lot of photographs, because he thought that customers like that. They like to get online and see photos of employees doing things. Lots of headshots, things like that. And he was very into this idea of this artificial happiness. And I'm not blaming him. I mean, that's just the way, that's the standard for things, you know. If a company is, there's the whole business aspect of that. And it's weird, you know, it is kind of weird where you want people to be friendly, especially in a customer service role. But we want this unnatural friendliness or this unnatural happiness even when it's not necessary. Like, we want respect. We want, like, say, I mean, because it's especially true in places like restaurants or, you know, people who are at any kind of helpline, customer service desk, people who are dealing with the public directly. We have this idea that they need to be happy. They can't just do their jobs in a way that's respectful and doesn't show any disrespect to you. But we want to think that they're smiling and happy. And I don't have that expectation at all, you know, honestly, because that's the thing about it, too, is like everybody who, you know, who has a server, a waitress who's, you know, very chipper and happy and, you know, very rarely does it feel natural. Most of the time it's like she's doing that because, you know, her boss wants her to, because our culture expects that, because she wants a tip. And happy waitresses make happy customers and they tip. I don't know. It's just that idea. And we know that it's fake and she knows it's fake and we just expect it. It's the same with photos. It's the same with all of that. And it's just kind of this runaway train that's gotten this far. And I don't know what that does to us. I don't know what it does to us to pretend to be happy. Because there is a certain amount of positive, you know, ideation, you know, positive thinking that where if you try to be happy, you will be happier. That's real. That's something I didn't want to accept for many years as a curmudgeonly negative person. I didn't want to accept that, you know, trying to think positive would actually make you feel more positive, that you can actually train your brain that way, train your reflexes. And for me, it's less about just thinking outright positively about things and more just like not going to that dark place, not going to that negative, cynical place all the time. It's more about training myself what not to do than it is training it to be this fountain of positivity. But still, I think there's something to be said for that. However, I don't think that forcing waitresses, forcing customer service people to be just the happiest person in the world. Oh, my day's great. You know, I don't think that forcing people to have that attitude necessarily makes them happier. You know, all those customer service, all those servers, all those restaurant workers, they should be thanking us because we're forcing them to act positive. Therefore, their lives are more positive and they're better. I don't think that's true at all. I think there reaches a certain point where, because, I mean, they're being forced to do it. I think that's a big key to all this, is they're forced to do that. Regardless, they might have gotten dumped by their boyfriend the night before. Their mom might have died, you know, the week previous, and they're thinking about it. Something really bad might have happened. Or even, and that's even too much, you know, saying that something really bad happened should be the reason why they're not happy. Like, I mean, they might just not feel great that day. There are days where there's no reason in the world to feel bad, but you just don't feel great. It could be anything. It could be something you ate the night before. But still, there's this expectation that they carry this, you know, happiness around and just, you know, got to keep the customers happy by being happy. You know, I don't think that because they're being forced to do it, I don't think that's going to make them just, you know, fake it till you make it. And I finally made it. I finally made it to the land of happiness. You know, that doesn't work. Whereas a lot of positive ideation and, you know, reinforcing positive thinking in your own mind is because you've made a choice to do it. I think that's the difference. That's why it works. And I think it's true for exercising and things like that as well. Like when I played football growing up, I hated everything we did in practice. You know, I loved the sport of football, but I fucking hated running. I hated stretching. I mean, I still kind of hate stretching, but I just hated all these exercises we had to do to train to get in shape. But when I decided to start doing it for myself, when I decided to start running and lifting weights and doing that solely because I wanted to, because I made the choice to do it, I enjoy it. I enjoy that process at the very least. Even when it's difficult, even when it's painful, I enjoy what I'm doing, what I'm participating in. And a large part of that is because I have made that decision. I don't have a coach or a parent telling me what to do. It's not a coach saying, do another 10 wind sprints. Do another 10. You know, if a coach is telling you that, you know, that's good for you. I think it's good to have that. I don't know. You know, the military obviously functions in a certain way for a reason. You know, I think that when you've made the decision to start, say, thinking positive, or if you've made the decision to try to be happy on a given day, it's a much different game than when your boss is telling you to smile and customers just depend on your smile. This hamburger isn't going to taste good unless you smile when you give it to me. It's perverse. It really is sort of perverse. So smiling is that big thing. And you think back, going back to the portraits, the old family portraits where everybody's very stoic or even solemn looking. And, you know, back then there wasn't just, we didn't have this expectation that you smile. But think about too, they would pose with dead people. You know, they would pose with their deceased. How come those people weren't smiling, huh? How come the dead grandma that they posed in that old portrait, how come she wasn't smiling? Because we sort of even expect that. I mean, I'm surprised that's not a bigger expectation when they embalm a corpse, you know. Make her smiling. Make her smile. Permanently smile. We want grandma in her casket to be permanently smiling. She's going to be, and we're going to put her in the ground, and we'll know that she has a fucking smile on her face. That sounds ridiculous, but I mean, that's sort of the path that we've been on. I mean, I'm surprised that's not a thing. I'm surprised we don't force corpses to smile, but people would be like, that's creepy. But really, I mean, I think it's creepy to expect living people to smile too. And women get that a lot where someone on the street will say, you should smile. You'd be prettier if you smile. And I've gotten that a couple times. You know, I know that that's like there's sort of a thing about that with women where people tell women that because there's this idea that women should look happy. They're on display or, you know, the housewife is the one who needs to, like, keep the family together and she's got to put on that happy face. She's got to be the host, the entertainer with the smiling face, and the husband is allowed to be the grumpy one. I've gotten it a couple times, not just with people telling me to smile in photos, which I've of course gotten repeatedly throughout my life. That same boss who, you know, loved documenting the company with pictures used to make like little comments and, you know, I've gotten it just on the street a couple times. One time it was pretty funny. A couple years ago, I was walking near a fair that was going on, near like a fair in town, and so there were people everywhere, and these kids started yelling at me, smile, you should smile. They were, you know, a few years younger than me, probably in their early 20s, and I didn't react. I mean, if someone's just talking to me at all on the street, I'm not going to respond to them. And then when I didn't respond and I kept walking, they started yelling, you dropped your badge. You dropped your badge. And I almost looked. you know, because fairs and stuff like that will have undercover cops walking around. I don't know if you should call them undercover cops, because that to me makes someone think that they're they got a hot investigation going, but, you know, just plain clothes. I think the boring term is plain clothes policeman. So they were accusing me basically of being a plain clothes policeman, and which I guess I could take as kind of a compliment. but I almost looked when they said you dropped your badge. And that's a weird thing to yell. It's a weird thing. Like, first, you're telling a guy to smile, and then when he doesn't smile or respond to you, you start yelling, you dropped your badge. Weird. We're weird as people. Going from there to there. But to get back to the laughter thing, that's a big one, because if you laugh, it shows that you're not taking a situation too seriously. And I think it's healthy in some ways to do a fake laugh in certain situations, just to kind of communicate that I'm not sitting here like being hateful at the very least. Although laughter is hateful too. I mean, we think of laughter as positive, but I think about a lot of situations where laughter is cruel. I mean, it's really one of the cruelest things. Like, as much as we want people to laugh, once again, it's almost like that. Being forced to smile at your job versus smiling just because you've decided to try to be in a better mood. It's sort of the same thing with laughter, where it's like we want people to laugh at us when we're trying to be funny, but we don't want people to laugh at us when we're not trying to be funny, or when someone else is trying to be funny at our expense. And if someone, like, say, insults you, say you're growing up, not that it ever changes, but if someone insults you and nobody laughs, that wound isn't quite as bad. But if someone insults you and people laugh, holy shit, that's going deep. That laughter is echoing in your wound. So, you know, laughter is very amorphous. It's very powerful in that way. And even, you know, on the other side of that, if you yourself are the one making the joke and nobody laughs, brutal. Especially, you know, there's little comments you'll make where, like, you don't expect somebody to laugh. You know, it's just a little quip or something, and, you know, people can acknowledge it or they don't have to. But there are times where you do make a full-blown punchline, and usually you're trying too hard, something like that, and people don't laugh. And that's, you know, that silence echoes. Just like, you know, a cruel joke at your expense, the laughter echoes. That silence when you make a joke and nobody cares, nobody laughs, that's brutal. But it's weird, too, because when someone fake laughs at your joke, you don't really think too hard if it's just kind of a, huh? You know, because it's kind of somebody was kind enough to acknowledge that I was trying to be funny. That's basically where that sits. But you don't really feel hurt in the same way you would if nobody laughed at all. You know, even, I don't know, and even if you're acutely aware that the laughter is fake, it just doesn't hurt as much. And I guess it's because there's this weird conscientious aspect where people are conscientious enough, they care enough about you to give a fake laugh. Laughing. How come you're not laughing? I've been accused of that too, just in the same way that people have said, how come you're not smiling? How come you're not smiling in that photo? I've actually been watching a movie with people before where I don't laugh. I remember exactly what it was one time where I was watching that movie Old School, where Will Ferrell gets shot in the neck with a dart. And the people I was with were rewinding it over and over again and just dying of laughter. And I got called out for not laughing. How come you're not laughing with us? How come you're not laughing? And that's a weird thing psychologically, because these people, they were rewinding it over and over again and just genuinely laughing. They weren't rewinding it over and over again to fake laugh. And they, one of them, you know, despite how fucking happy he was, despite the level of happiness this clip, this movie was giving him, he felt the need to, like, quite, you know, in a kind of a mean-spirited fashion, you know, point out that I wasn't laughing and ask me why. And so it's like, no matter how happy he was, no matter how funny he found that movie, he found it in him to question me in this really kind of weird way. So how happy could he actually be? I don't know. But that is a thing, too, where, you know, I find a lot of things funny that I don't laugh at. And it just kind of like stirs some amusement in my brain, but not enough to actually make me laugh. And I feel that way about stand-up comedy, because I'm not a huge stand-up comedy fan, but I like what they do. I like the way their brains work. I like the way they put things together. And I find myself thinking that way sometimes. Like I find myself putting jokes together that I would never actually want to use, because I don't find them genuinely funny, but it's sort of like a puzzle of putting like different pieces of things together. And I sort of do it with things that, like, it's almost like, oh, I could see where someone would find this funny if you thought about this idea with this in mind and you brought this into it and pulled it back around for this in this way. But it's not something that I find genuinely funny, so I don't really want to pursue it. And I wonder how much stand-up comedy is that way. Because I listen to a lot of stand-up comedian podcasts, and I find them much funnier in that context where it's natural, where there's a flow, and they're just talking. I find that much funnier. I find them much funnier on that. Because there have been people where I've listened to them on maybe 100 podcasts. I've listened to them as guests or even listened to their own podcasts many times. And then I'll be like, well, I should actually check out that guy's podcast. And I do, rather, I'll check out that guy's stand-up comedy. I'll check out his comedy special. And I'm like, I don't find this funny. Despite all the many hours I've listened to this person talk and laughed at what they've said just casually in conversation, I don't find their structured performance comedy funny. And I still appreciate their podcast and listen to it, but I won't watch their stand-up comedy for that reason. And a funny example is Duncan Trussell, because I've listened to God knows how many hours of him. He's one of my favorite. He has one of my favorite podcasts. He's one of my favorite characters. I've never seen a single moment of his stand-up comedy, and that's really crazy. It reminds me of a friend of mine who I've known for many years, and I know him through music. And he used to always say to me, he's like, you know, I've never heard your music. Even though we know each other through those circles, he's like, I've never heard your music. And I love that, because it means our friendship is based on something else. Because I think it's important to, there's just something about human chemistry, and this is a whole other topic, but there's something about human chemistry that doesn't really require common interests. It doesn't, you know, if you have chemistry with someone, you can, It's something else entirely. And it's good to understand each other's perspective. It's good to have the same points of reference. You know, nothing really compares to having a friend where you have the exact same points of reference, because that fuels a lot of comedy. You know, it's hard to be funny if you don't know what each other's fucking talking about half the time, if there's no context. But that's just a funny thing. I feel that way sort of about some of these comedians and stuff, where I'm like, man, like, I appreciate their podcast, but I've either never watched their comedy, their actual craft, or I just don't, or if I have, it just hasn't clicked with me. It's almost like there's different levels to existence, and they don't all intersect, and whatever. But laughter and smiling, you know, the amount, I'd say most of the laughter and smiling we experience, and this isn't supposed to sound dark, but most of it is sort of fake. And I feel very juvenile even pointing that out. You know, I once again feel like the my sister's boyfriend's friend, my sister's boyfriend's friend, asking his dad, like, why do people pat each other on the back after his dad pats him on the back, and his dad just responding with a knee to the gut. I feel like both of those people right now. I feel like the son asking his dad why he patted him on the back, and I feel like the dad kneeing the son. I think that's the story of my life, is I'm both of those people at all times. I'm patting myself on the back, then asking myself why I did that, and then kneeing myself in the stomach. And, you know, you hear about people like, he can suck his own dick, you know, because this isn't, that didn't come out of nowhere. No, but you hear about that, like people who are like, he can suck his own dick, he can do this, you can touch your toes. How about kneeing yourself in the fucking stomach? That's a fucking talent I want. I want the ability to knee myself in the stomach. ¶¶
land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me.